tonight I want to look, or begin to look at verses 3 to verses 14, where the Apostle Paul, he talks to us about a spiritual blessing in heavenly places. And tonight, and God willing, next Sunday morning, maybe set next Sunday night as well, we're going to look at where these blessings come from, who they come from, who they come to, how they come to us, why they come to us, and then what these blessings actually are. But can I say to you that if I talk about spiritual blessings, I imagine tonight there's many of you here who think it all sounds a bit airy-fairy. And so tonight I want to start off by looking at where these blessings come from and take you and explain to you and underline to you that there is a spiritual realm. Now, myself and Ross were in school on Friday. We were in the canteen chatting, and I said to him, I was preaching in Amien Park on Sunday night. And he said, Ephesians? I said, yes. He said, that's the deepest water in the New Testament. I said, thanks, Ross. And then he said, I hope you know what you're doing. So I'd just like to thank Ross publicly for those words of encouragement. But they are deep waters. And tonight, I want to take you, maybe for the whole sermon, or certainly for the biggest part of it, into the spiritual realm. So before we start looking at spiritual blessings and who gives them to us and who receives them and what they are, and I want to take you tonight from this realm into another realm. I want to underline and stress upon you that the invisible is more real than the visible. So if you're not a Christian here tonight, my task tonight is to make you realize, with God's help, that this spiritual realm, even though it might sound airy-fairy, is what it's all about. And if you're a Christian here tonight, then we need to understand that we, even now, live in two worlds. And so let me introduce you to the realm. Now, in the Old Testament, everything was quite physical. There was the promised land. There was the king. We heard this morning, over the last few weeks, by Mr. Willie about the King David. There was a king, a monarchy you could see, a land you could walk on. There was a temple you could go to. There was a priest you could see. Everything was very physical. But when you come to the New Testament, Jesus Christ, he says, isn't he, to the woman of Samaria, there will come a time when you will worship in spirit and in truth. So today, Christians, we haven't got a land. We haven't got an earthly king. We haven't got a temple. We don't go to a priest. We are now in the spiritual realm. But it's still very real. But let me ask you a question tonight as a Christian. Do we really appreciate this? Or do we judge things in earthly blessings? How do you value, how do you esteem things? Maybe you're a parent here tonight and you've got children and you want to see your child do well. So how good they are at football is really important. If your son's a good footballer, wow, that makes you proud. Or maybe you've got a daughter and you think she does well at GCSEs or A-levels and that makes you proud. That's what you wish for. Maybe you're sat here tonight, you feel rubbish about yourself because you're not the most attractive. So you think, oh, that is what's important, like how I look. When we meet people, almost the second or third time we say, what do you do? And if they've got a top job, then, wow, we're impressed. Earthly blessings. But the writer here is saying, listen, let's get talking about spiritual blessings. That's what's important. I wonder tonight who you think is the most impressive person in this church. I wonder if there is an impressive person in this church, but let's say there is. Maybe you think that, or if there was somebody, we had a meeting last week and an international event, and maybe you brought a friend, and you think, who do I want my friend to meet? Who's cool and trendy and impressive in Amiens Park? And maybe you take them to the person who's got the best job or the best looking or whatever. Or do you take them to the godliest? You see, even as Christians, we are, I would argue, or I speak for myself, I don't want to presume and speak for you, the physical, to me, is more real than the spiritual. I've taken up with this world and what matters in this world. But the writer to the Ephesians is saying, listen, let's go to the heavenly places. Let's talk about spiritual blessings. Now, let me explain something to you. I'm a Welshman. I've kept that quiet, but I thought I'd declare that tonight. I'm Welsh. I was brought up in a village called Beaufort, in the shadow of a town called Ebervale. And in this village where I grew up in a terraced house on one of the back streets of that village. In the village, there was three shops. There was a newsagent called Mrs. Northeast. Actually, it was four shops. There was a post office run by a husband and wife called Dilwyn and Gareth. There was a grocer's shop by a lady called Mrs. George. And there was an Italian sweet shop. They get everywhere. Italian sweet shop, which once a week sold ice cream as well. And then, because every Welsh village needs one of these, there was a ballroom. Because obviously we couldn't get through our lives without a ballroom. But while I grew up, that was my world. That was my world. And so the richest person in Beaufort, to me, was the richest person. The cleverest person in Beaufort was the cleverest person. It was my world. And then I started to grow up, and my parents would take me to the Aberystwyth Conference. And I met people from Cardiff. Cool, trendy people like Marianne and Liz. Cardiff. And I remember talking to my mate called Paul Levy. And I was in a naff-naff t-shirt, an Aran jumper, jade kappa shell suit bottoms, and Gola trainers. And said, Levy, not everyone is like me and you. You see, my horizons had grown. And then I came to London. And I've met people in London who could probably buy Beaufort. Then you go to places like Sri Lanka. You go on holiday to other places. And suddenly, Beaufort is no longer, to me, the world. What's my point? You might sit there, you might snigger, you might think, what a naive person. What an idiot for thinking that that little Welsh village was his world. What can I say to you tonight? I'm probably looking at people tonight who think this is it. There's a realm, a spiritual realm. There's another world. This isn't it. However impressive London is, however great the United States of America, however impressive the world is, there's more to it. And one day we will leave this world and we look back and think, I can't believe we thought this was it. There's another realm. But you see, the problem with the church today is this. We've lost sight of this other realm. We're all about the here and now. Time and space and what we can see and touch and feel and handle. But my friends tonight, Ephesians, it shouts out to us. There's another realm. Let me read you a quote by Brian Edwards in his book on revival. He says this. When society no longer thinks about eternity, it almost goes without saying that is because the church no longer thinks that way either. Our lives as Christians and our worship when we are together impress the world with our love of this life. There is little about us to convince the world that we are motivated for eternity rather than time. People do not touch eternity in our meetings. They rarely hear of it in our conversations. And they certainly do not see it as priorities in our lives. Of course, it glances off our gospel here and there. But we are not passionate about heaven and hell or the second coming of Christ. And we have lost a sense of accountability to God. I wonder if that's you tonight. It's certainly me. I've lost eternal perspective. I've lost this idea of another realm. You see, when George Whitefield preached, how did he know that people were listening? He says this, they were all attention and they heard like people hearing for eternity. Wouldn't it be tremendous tonight as we listen to this word being preached that our hearts are taken up with a sense of eternity? That suddenly this world is passing and fading and we laugh at ourselves because we really think this is it. When we're taken up with a sense that there's a heavenly realm. And so let me come to talk more specifically about this realm. There's another realm, but what does this realm consist of? And so let me explain again. We come to this book called Ephesians. We looked in the last sermon about it was written to us. It comes from God. It's about what everything's really all about. In this section now, over the next couple of sermons, we look at spiritual blessings. But before we can do that, we have to be clear in our mind. There's a spiritual realm. And so, my first thing is this. This realm consists of a devil. You see, and under him is a legion of evil spirits. In Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 12, it talks about principalities and powers and rulers of the darkness of this age. There's a spiritual host of wickedness in the heavenly places. Now maybe you sat here tonight, you don't only come to church, you think, what a wacko. You really believe in a devil? Well, I just believe the Bible. If I was to ask you tonight, what do you think causes the church's greatest problem? If I was to ask you as an individual Christian, what do you struggle with the most? I wonder what you'd say. Maybe you say, well, I get persecuted in work. They give me such a tough time for being a Christian. Maybe you say, well, I think the biggest problem I face today as a Christian or the church faces is evolutionary science. That is our biggest problem today. Maybe you say, well, the problem today is this. There's so many false religions around. That's the problem. Maybe you think, well, the problem is laws that are passed which go against God's word. Ways of life that we are forced to accept. Maybe you think tonight, well, actually, there's a particular sin that I really, really struggle with. I cannot get the better of it. Maybe this temptation, you know that you're tempted to do sin, this particular sin, all the time. Maybe you're a young person tonight. You say the biggest problem you face is the attraction of the world. Being left out of things. Maybe there's a particular person who's giving you a hard time. Maybe as a church, we think our problem is this. We're just marginalized in society. No one listens to us anymore. We're irrelevant. We're misunderstood. We're mistreated. Maybe you think, well, the problem with Amy Park is this. Our evangelism is so ineffective. We can't seem to reach anyone. What can I tell you tonight? Even though all of those things are problems, real problems, none of them are what we are really fighting against. You see, tonight, we are not fighting frail men with physical and mental frailties. Our enemy is the devil. a personal, invisible, powerful spirit who, as Ephesians 2 verse 2 says, controls the minds of the unconverted. That's our enemy. And under him are a legion of evil spirits. You can see in chapter 6 verse 12, which we'll come to probably in about 5 years' time, different ranks, and some of them are given names. But the darkness of this age is all attributed to these awful beings. You see, why do scientists teach evolution as fact? Why do people declare themselves atheists? Why do they look out into the universe and then say, I'm an atheist? Why do governments pass laws which are sinful? Why do people call right wrong and wrong right? Why are there tonight infinitely more intelligent people than me who don't believe the Bible? Well, because the devil has blinded their eyes. You see, what is the main reason why I can never referee a rugby match between England and Wales? Well, because England would never be able to win. Why? Because I am unashamedly biased. You see, you can talk to me about English rugby and you can tell me how great. I will never accept it. I'll never accept it. I'll always come up with a reason. Why? I'm biased. I'm blind. Why won't scientists ever believe that in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth? Because they're blind to it. The devil has blinded their eyes. You see, if you call a taxi tonight and you got in the taxi, and the taxi driver said to you, just to let you know, I've drunk 20 pints. I would suggest, however much you want to get home, you get out of the taxi. Because that taxi driver is under the influence. And can I say to you tonight, sinful men and women, you might be unconverted here tonight. What's happened to you? The devil has given you pint after pint after pint of this world's thinking, of his thinking. And so now you're totally, you can't think straight. My friends, there's a devil. We don't wrestle against flesh and blood. You know that, don't you? We wrestle against the devil and all his minions. Let me give you one more quote. This is Lloyd Jones. He says this: we all know something about persecution. We know what it is to be confronted by people who are unbelievers and anti-Christian, and how difficult they make our lives at times. Yes, we know all that, but that is not the whole story. We need to be aware of the fact that these men and women, these individuals, are but instruments of the great powers behind our world. The Bible impresses upon us the truth that is the devil who is fighting God. So often we fail to remember that, and therefore become confused and cannot understand things. What you and I see with our physical eyes is simply the visible part of a greater spiritual war that is going on in another realm, in which we are being used, as it were, as the instruments. See, the devil tonight, this is the great news, he's been defeated. On Calvary, Jesus Christ, he says to me before that, he says, I saw the devil fall from heaven, beaten. But he isn't cast into hell yet. So what does he do? He knows he's lost, but now he's out to cause as much havoc as he possibly can. And so he knows he's lost to God. He's lost to Jesus Christ. So now what does he do? He goes about destroying the church. He attacks individuals. Maybe you're sat tonight, and this wicked and frustrated being, he's taunting you. He says to you, remember those sins. Remember you were past. When the preacher preaches, he talks about grace and mercy. He'll say in your ear, not you. You're too past the pale. He'll rake up your guilty secrets, and he might be tormenting you tonight. My friends, we have an enemy. Our pastor's on sabbatical. What's the devil doing? Well, he's in the bushes. He's thinking, here we go. Let's get in there. We have to be on our guard. But as the hymn writer said, he says this, when Satan tempts me to despair and tells me of the guilt within, upward I look and see him there who made an end of all my sin. My friends, it's not about what we can see. There's another realm. There's a devil. We have to be on our guard and make sure you are in Jesus Christ. My second thing about this realm is not only is there a devil, there's a hell. Maybe you think tonight, come on now. Lighten up. You've talked about devil, and now you're talking about hell. What's your problem, man? Well, I would say that today, as Christians, we find it hard to take hell seriously. But it's a real place. You see, it's the final abode of all of those who are consigned to eternal punishment. This realm, we know that London exists, Cardiff exists, New York, they're real places, and Asriel, more real, is hell. Do you believe that? You might say, I do, it's in the Bible, but yeah, but do you really believe that? Do you believe that tonight, as we are sat here, there's people in hell? What's hell like? Well, it's a place of absolute poverty. We had the teenagers around our house earlier on, and it's great to see them. We have Coke. Perhaps I shouldn't tell you this about your mums and dads, but we have Coke and pizza, and we laugh and chat. It's a nice time. Maybe some of you last night, you went out for a meal with friends. Maybe in the winter, you walk through crunching snow. It's amazing. It's great. Or hot bread that you can eat into, and laughter and family and friends. All the good things we enjoy. But tonight in hell, there's none of that. There's none of that. A place of absolute poverty. Nothing good. And not only is it a place of absolute poverty, it's a place of agonizing pain. You see, it's a place of fire where people tonight, they weep and they gnash their teeth. They're in so much torment. It's a place of outer darkness where people are in total distress and misery. And the Bible, people say, well, it's just symbolic. Well, it might be, but do you know why? Because the reality is worse. And friends, I make no apology tonight for preaching about something which is so out of vogue, because it's so important. Hell. I don't know if you've ever seen a program called Prison Break. My wife and I really enjoyed it. It got a bit crazy at the end, but it was good. The beginning of the third series, I don't want to spoil it for you just in case you decide to. I realize I once spoiled 24 for some reason, so I won't do that. But I remember you go into the third series, and they're in a prison called Sona. If you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. For 3 episodes, we were so distressed. Because it was a horrible place. It was dark and dingy, and people were just chained up, and they were just in horrible clothes, and they were all angry with each other, and they didn't have any food, and it was just, they couldn't get out. It was awful. Well, can I tell you tonight, there's a place which is far worse than Sona. But the question is this, is hell disproportionately severe? Well, my wife is very scared of spiders. And if there's a spider in the house, she calls me to sort it out. And in a very macho way, I take care of it. And she'll say this to me, do whatever you want, just get rid of it. And so I hope I won't offend anyone tonight, but more often than not, I kill it. I know. Now, we've got a cat. It'd be very annoying. Now, I imagine tonight if I've killed a spider, it might offend one or two of you, but most of you don't think I should be locked up in prison. You've got a cat. There have been times it's crossed my mind. But if I did, you'd probably be a bit more offended by me. Now, some of you might have mother-in-laws. You might not think a lot of them. But I'm sure you don't say to your husband and wife, listen, do whatever you want, just get rid of her. What's my point? If you killed your mother-in-law tonight, you'd be in prison. Because killing your mother-in-law is slightly more serious than killing a spider. Our sin is against God. And we deserve, if we shake our fist at our Maker, we deserve eternal damnation. And hell tonight is absolute poverty, agonizing pain, but just an angry presence. You see, God is in hell, but it's his angry presence. I don't know if you've ever been under somebody's anger. It's horrible, isn't it, when you know someone's angry with you. I remember as a young boy growing up, and my dad was a minister, I remember being in a communion service. I say this to my shame. I remember being in a communion service, and I just had the giggles. I could not stop laughing. And I put gloves in my mouth. I think it might have been June. I can't remember. I put gloves in my mouth. I couldn't stop laughing. And he turned around from the table. He said, I'll see you when we get home. And everyone gasped. And I had to spend the next hour or so. I certainly stopped laughing. I spat the glove out. I started to sweat. Why? Because I knew when I got home, my father would have a quiet word with me. Probably a whack. And that angry presence hanging over me. Imagine spending eternity with the creator of the universe angry with you. And it's an appalling prospect. The worst thing about hell is this. You're in pain. There's nothing good. There's nothing kind or pleasant. It's all horrible. God is angry with you all the time. And the worst thing is this. It never ends. Dante said this, over the gates of hell are these words, abandon hope, all you who enter in. You're there forever and ever and ever. The question is this. Do people from Amien Park Chapel go to hell? Could there be someone sat here tonight who could end up in hell? Well, yes. See, John Bunyan in Pilgrim Progress, he describes ignorance arriving at the celestial gates. Ignorance thought he was a Christian, but he wasn't. And on arrival at heaven, he is turned away. And Bunyan and Christian says this, then I saw that there was a way to hell, even from the gates of heaven. There's a way to hell from Amien Park Chapel tonight. Do you know that? You see, if you're unconverted tonight, young person, maybe you've grown up in this church, maybe you've heard this gospel 100 times, maybe you've come with a friend tonight, and you think, why is this man going to persuade me to become a Christian? Is he going to tell me that if I come to Jesus Christ, all my problems are over? No. Is he going to tell me my life will be better? I don't know. What is your reason for urging me to become a Christian tonight? Can I tell you this? Flee from the wrath to come. There's a hell. And you could end up there. Do you know that? God could call you tonight. The breath you're taking is given to you by God. And God could say, enough. And you could be called before the judge of all the earth tonight. And imagine hearing those words, I never knew you. Depart from me into everlasting fire. Can you see tonight why this realm is more important than what we can see? You see, I've got a son. I would love him to do well in school, to be a great sportsman, to be all those things. But what would it profit him if he gained the whole world but lost his soul? And sometimes what eats away at me is this. I have sat in staff rooms and laughed with people. They'd be my mates. And tonight they're in hell. Doesn't that worry you? There's people you know that you were too politically correct to tell them about the wrath to come. Young person tonight, I'm not a salesman telling you to come to Jesus Christ and everything will be fine. I'm not. I'm saying for your own sake, flee from the wrath to come. There's a hell. It's real. Maybe we try to sanitize it in the 21st century, but it's still real. But the good news is this. Not only is there a devil, not only is there a hell, but in this spiritual realm, there's a heaven. And heaven is a real place. Wayne Grudem says this, heaven is even now a place, the one whose location is now unknown to us and whose existence is now unable to be perceived by our natural senses. There's a heaven. Jesus Christ, in Acts chapter 1, was taken up into heaven. When Stephen was being stoned, he said this, but he, full of the Holy Spirit, gazed into heaven and he saw the glory of God and Jesus standing at the right hand of God. Heaven is paradise. There's no sin, no sorrow, no night, no death, no stress. Heaven. And so tonight, while there's a real devil who is roaming this earth, while there's a real hell with his people in absolute torment, there's a heaven where people are in paradise. There might have been people here who are Christians. They've died recently. Where are they? Well, they're in heaven. Maybe there's people here who have lost loved ones, who will lose loved ones. What does the Bible tell us? Listen, don't sorrow as those with no hope. King David, he loses his child, doesn't he? He says these amazing words. You can't come to me, but one day I will come to you. Maybe there's someone here tonight who is frightened of dying. Maybe you've got a loved one who's a Christian and they're frightened of them dying. But can I tell you this? Death is just, the Bible doesn't even call death for the Christian death. It calls it sleep. They fell asleep in Jesus Christ. There's a heaven. I don't know if you've ever been to the White House. The White House now is closed to the American public. It is protected by the United States Secret Service. Every road within 300-yard radius is closed. 10-feet-high gates circles the grounds. Snipers are posted on all the roofs. It's got its very own parliamentary army protecting it. Not only this, but if you wanted to try and land a helicopter or jump the gate, surface-to-air missile launchers stationed around the site would shoot you down. One day, a little boy walked through the gates, smiled at the security guards, and carried on across the grass. As he walked, he saluted the army officers and skipped towards the West Wing doors. When he reached the door, he knocked and flung open the doors impatiently. Running straight past the registration desk, he began to quicken his pace towards the president's private office. He went past guard after guard after guard after guard until he reached the door to the President of the United States' main office door. Outside stood two guards, 6 feet 4 inches of muscle and gun, with sunglasses to match. They looked at the boy, and the boy looked back. In a hurry, with no time to waste, he pushed open the doors, and there before him stood the President of the United States, John F. Kennedy. The President looked up from his desk and said, "Son, I've been looking forward to seeing you," and picked him up and hugged him. Can I say to you, one day, you and I will close our eyes. We'll go into this other realm. And it'll be awesome. Eternity. We'll stand before a judgment seat. We'll stand before the Creator, the holy judge of all the universe. And he'll smile at you. And he'll say, "I've been looking forward to seeing you. Come in." Isn't that incredible? Another realm. People who've died in this congregation who are Christians, they live tonight. They're in the intermediate state. They are spirits of just men and women made perfect. They're more alive than they've ever been. Haslam, when he died, he said this, the last words he said, "I'm just beginning to live heaven." But as I come to a close, tonight we are not just surrounded by heaven and hell. It's not just a devil, but we are surrounded by angels. Do you know that? Angels. In Revelation it says, "Then I heard a voice of many angels, numbering myriads of myriads and thousands and thousands." There are 100 million angels, and they surround us. They can move from one point in space to another. They're in heaven, which is their headquarters, but where they constantly worship God. But God sends them to us when we need them. Do you remember when Jesus Christ was in Gethsemane? He was praying. He was in agony. And we can only imagine that at that point, angels were looking down and they would say to God, "Let one of us go down and help him." They'd sung to him at his birth. And here they were now, and they said, let one of us go down and help him. And then do you remember that one of them came and ministered to him? The same is true for you and I. Do you know, angels constantly observe what is going on in church. They draw near to you, especially at your death. Do you remember Lazarus? What happened when he died? It says this, "The poor man died and was carried by angels to Abraham's bosom." We're in a different realm. But the last thing and the best thing I can say tonight as I close is we are, tonight, before we come to look at these spiritual blessings, let's get our head tonight out of this world into a spiritual realm. A devil, a hell, a heaven, angels, saints that live on, but more importantly, a God and a Savior. You see, Jesus Christ, he's still alive. He ascended back to heaven where he is tonight. And he says this, "One day we will dwell with him." He says, "I want to take you to myself, that where I am, there you might be also. You'll see my face." Do you ever think that? One day you'll see Jesus' face. And he desires for us to be with him. That's the longing of his heart, that we will one day be with him. And do you ever wonder what he'll say when he sees you? Well, the Bible tells us he will see the travail of his soul. He'll see the ones who he died for on Calvary and be satisfied. I don't know if you've ever seen the film, The Truman Show. It chronicles the life of a man who is initially unaware that he is living in a constructed reality TV show, which is broadcast around the clock to billions of people around the globe. And so he's living his life, he just thinks it's his life, he's totally unaware that actually it's a TV show about him and his life. He gets suspicious. He thinks, hang on a minute, I think there's another world out there. And so he sets about escaping from this world. And eventually he punches through the wall that is actually a fake sky, breaks down in tears, and an awestruck Truman discovers a flight of stairs and a door-marked exit. One day that'll be you and me. This isn't it. And one day we'll come to a door, maybe even tonight, we could come to a door-marked exit and go out into the real world. And Truman, as he leaves, he says, in case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. And he enters the real world. And that's what you and I will do one day. We'll say goodbye to this. We go to eternity. The question I ask you is this: where will you spend that eternity? You see, if you're a Christian tonight, you can look forward to being in paradise. But if you're not a Christian tonight, make your peace with God now. Because you do not want to walk out of that exit door and end up in hell. Flee from the wrath to come.